have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party, the podcast that takes you all the way through the back catalogue of A24, reviews the latest releases, and brings you interviews with the people behind the films. On today's show, she's a star, and it's her time to shine. It's the return of Pearl. I'm your co-host, Alice King, and with me as always is Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really excited to finally discuss Pearl. We've had a kind of really frustrating period where I feel like we've gone back to the old days where we're like, it would be lovely if we could get a UK release of one of these films. And I feel like there's a bunch of them at the moment that we're just being constantly stung on. So I think you mentioned earlier, we're a bit out of sync.
We are a bit out of sync in terms of how we always used to do it was, because it's the A24 project, technically we would review everything in the order that A24 released it. However, there has been some issues in getting access to that content from the US, and things taking slightly normal than longer to reach the UK shores here. Must be Brexit, I'm sure. But we're going to try and get back on track eventually. But you'll just have to bear with us. But we will eventually review every single film, as we always do. But before we dive into the main review, of course, it's time to catch up with some A24-hour news. One of the hot topics this week is award season is underway. The first critics nominations were announced a couple of weeks ago with the Gotham Awards. Everything Everywhere All at Once was nominated for Best Picture, Best Lead Performance, and Best Supporting Performance. There were nominations for Funny Pages, The Inspection, After Yang, and Brendan Fraser in The Whale. The trailer for that has dropped literally about an hour before the podcast. You know, we were meant to record this last week, but, you know, Lee, you got held up at work, so we pushed it a week. So, you know, we've got the trailer for The Whale, which I'd say doesn't give away very much. Someone, I'm pretty sure, was saying that they fully expected The Whale to have released in December without a trailer actually dropping. But we did get a very, very brief teaser today for that one. And I think it's fair to say that the surprise nomination out of all the films at the Gotham Awards would have been the fact that After Sun got 4 nominations, including the coveted Best Picture nomination for the Gotham Awards. Now, this is sort of the New York-based film critic selection there. Following that, it received 16 BIFA nominations. That's the British Independent Film Awards. I think it's fair to say, I mean, I actually wrote a piece on this for Next Best Picture about how I believe that After Sun potentially could be a dark horse in the awards race. To be honest, I don't think it will ever get to the Oscars, but it seems to be picking up a lot of steam with the critics groups. I mean, it was always going to do very well, I think, with the BAFTAs and the BIFAs and stuff like that. But what did you make of this first batch of nominations, and where do you see A24 going all in this award season?
Probably The Whale. Whether that's the best one to go for, I'm not too sure, but I think The Whale's the banker. I mean, you can immediately imagine that.
You think they're going to go more than just Brendan Fraser on this? They're going to go across the board.
They'll go Brendan Fraser. I think they'll go for Best Adapted Screenplay. I think they'll go for Best Film. whether they nominate Darren Aronofsky, I don't think his direction would warrant a Best Director nomination, but I can imagine that being the one where they sort of try and bet a good flush on. I think that's what I anticipate. It's not just going to be Brendan Fraser. I think they could probably guarantee that they're going to get a nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay. So I think they can bank on two for two there, which by A24 standards is probably pretty good going.
Yeah, and in terms of Best Supporting Actress, I know going into Venice, before anyone had seen the film, there was a lot of talk about Sadie Sink, given her breakout performance in Stranger Things Season 4. But where do you see the nomination going? It's very doubtful that they will get nominations for both Hong Chau and Sadie Sink. Yeah, no, I mean, sort of going in, that was the top. But I mean, I was really impressed with Hong Chau's performance in this one, and I could see her potentially getting the nod over Sadie. But I mean, so do you think that they might favour The Whale as a more traditional Oscar pick over, you know, the one of the critical darlings, you know, the first A24 film to gross over $100 million, Everything Everywhere All at Once? It's managed to sustain its momentum since its release in May, which, you know, has Mad Max Fury Road vibes all over it. Do you think it's just going to be a bit too out there for the Academy?
It probably gets, you know, the original screenplay, for example, nomination. Yeah. I think that's probably where it goes and so on. So, yeah, I think I can imagine a nomination for that, but I can't see perhaps it, you know, breaking anything in. But, you know, as I've said, I don't think it's been the greatest year for original kind of cinema and stuff. I mean, ultimately, there are eight movies up for, you know, eight spots. I think it can go up to 10 as well, can't it? So, you know, I think it could, you know, I wouldn't rule it out being nominated, but I'd be surprised if it does. But, you know, if there's a year to sneak in, I think this is the year.
Yeah, I mean, I will be happy if Ki Hoon Kwan gets a Best Supporting Actor nomination. I think that's a pretty much dead cert at the moment. Michelle Yeoh is on the periphery, I think, of the best actresses. That's a very stacked category at the moment. But, you know, we've seen A24 before. You know, when they go all in on one film, like Moonlight, they can do very well. When they try to sort of divvy up the chips a bit, I'm thinking of the year 2019, where they had sort of Midsommar, they had Waves, they had The Lighthouse, they had Uncut Gems, nothing, and The Farewell, actually, as well. Nothing really managed to get over the line in the end. I think they just spread themselves too thin at that point, you know, to the much chagrin of everyone who wanted Adam Sandler to be nominated for Best Actor for Uncut Gems. But, you know, it was not to be. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they play this. I'm wondering if I don't think they will recalibrate given the critical consensus behind After Sun just yet. In my article, I said that the only thing potential Oscar bait out of those ones is potentially a Best Original Screenplay nod and maybe fifth slot for the Best Actor race for Paul Mescal. I think it's pretty much guaranteed it will be Austin Butler, Colin Farrell, Hugh Jackman, and somebody else who's completely gone off the top of my head. Oh no, Brendan Fraser, of course. Yes, and the fifth spot is up for grabs, but it's at the moment Bill Nighy is rumoured to be number five, but I think given a strong campaign, Paul Mescal could potentially sneak in there, but we will have to see. We're speculating a lot. We haven't seen all the films yet. We have no idea. There's still months to go. But, you know, some people, you know, make a very good living at talking about this, so there we go. But, you know, this current crop of award season films, there are more A24 films on the way. There are always more A24 films on the way. We've had some updates recently about The Iron Claw. We had the first picture of Zac Efron as one of the Von Erich wrestling dynasty doing a dropkick, a pretty decent-looking dropkick in the one still that I saw. But that's going to be Sean Durkin, who did Martha, May, Marlene, and that's going to be starring Zac Efron, Harris Dickinson, Jeremy Allen White from the TV series, which I've not seen, but everyone raves about The Bear. And that's going to be, we're going to get a talk about wrestling and A24 at the same time. I mean, oh!
I'm excited for you. It's you will be our
all
expert
my niche
on this.
Interests coming together. I'm very excited. And another sort of niche interest and potential crossover we're going to be looking at is the film called Dream Scenario, which is directed by Christopher Borgli. And he directed Sick of Myself, which was one of the few films I caught at the London Film Festival this year, and I thought it was fantastic. Very, very dark, wicked, black as you can get sense of humour, about a woman who goes to extreme lengths to be the centre of attention, and it wouldn't be fair to say it backfires because she knows what she's doing, but it is messed up. And no details on it apart from the fact that this is going to be starring Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage will finally be in an A24 film. I know the likes of Mandy and etc. have A24 vibes, but this is his official entry into the A24 universe, which means we're going to have to do a crossover episode with Caged In Podcast, aren't we?
Yeah, we most definitely will. And yeah, I was reading recently that post the success of Pig, this humble little movie, you know, he's commanding, what, 4.5 million a film now? So yeah, he's definitely lucked out. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
He's back in the game, as the unbearable lightness of unbearable talent would suggest. You know, you're back. And he's like, not that I went anywhere. He never went anywhere. It's just that his fee's gone up. I think, yeah, 4.5 million for Hollywood, but he might go down to about 1 million for an indie. So, you know, there's some wiggle room in there.
Yeah, he knows how to do one for them, one for him. So, yeah, I think we know where that's going to be.
Absolutely. Cue National Treasure 3 finally being greenlit, I expect. And the final bit of news that we had, which, you know, we would have missed out if we'd recorded this last week, and it dropped quite conveniently on Halloween, and I think quite a left field bit of news that nobody was really expecting. And this is that A24 will be producing a limited series called Crystal Lake, based on the camp from Friday the 13th. And it will be... showrunner will be Brian Fuller, and I'm going to hand over to you, Lee, because you know all about Brian Fuller, don't you?
Yeah, I love Brian Fuller. Well, no surprise, I love, you know, we talk about niche interest, I love him because of his connection to Star Trek. You know, he worked on Star Trek Voyager. You know, he is a lifelong Star Trek fan. One of my favorite podcasts is The Delta Flyers, where couple of actors from Star Trek, they're revisiting all the Voyager episodes, and Brian Fuller regularly comes on to talk about the episodes that he's done, and you know, he's just so passionate to listen to. He was going to be the creator, the head launcher of Star Trek Discovery, and then he definitely has a bit of a reputation of sometimes walking away from TV shows, so let's not bet all our money on Brian Fuller being there when the show finally drops. But yeah, for me, obviously most people know him for his work on Hannibal and
Heroes.
I think Heroes, yeah. And yeah,
one good series followed by an absolutely terrible series.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm very excited to see Brian Fuller in this world. I just think he is an incredible writer, personality. And I must admit, I was very shocked. I had to do a double take, because when you kind of think of A24, you think about like kind of independent, original stories. You know,
elevated horror.
Yes, elevated horror. And, you know, with what we're about to talk about in terms of Pearl today, you know, this is their sort of first horror kind of trilogy that they're kind of going for, and they're doing their own unique one. But to see them kind of get into sort of like a franchise IP that you would associate, if you kind of heard like, oh, Lionsgate or Fox are doing a prequel series to you know, Crystal Lake and so on, you kind of like roll your eyes going, oh, here we go, of course they are. But with Brian Fuller being involved in A24, it's kind of like, oh, that's interesting, where's this going to go, and so on. So yeah, I'm definitely very, very curious, and that's certainly, as I say, with Brian Fuller's connection, it'll be something I'll be kind of watching from afar, about sort of how that production process goes and if it's going to be a smooth one.
Indeed. As Leonardo DiCaprio once said in Django Unchained, you had my curiosity, now you have my attention. Especially given the fact that due to rights issues, it is a prequel series to Friday the 13th, because apparently they are not allowed to use the name Jason Voorhees or have anyone in a hockey mask. So obviously it's looking to be more along the style of the sort of Bates Motel prequel TV series. So, you know, if that was your bag, then I guess we'll have to see. But like Lee says, Brian Fuller not always sticking the landing when it comes to actually finishing a show. So I'm sure we will bring you any updates in future episodes of A24 Hour News. But
Dallas, I've just got breaking news for you.
Has Brian Fuller left?
No. A24's wrestling pick, the Iron Claw from Cannes and Sundance Prize winner Sean Durkin, is getting a new dash of authenticity with the addition to the cast of professional wrestler Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Does that mean anything to you?
MJF from AEW, the rival to WWF. Sorry, WWE now. It's entertainment, it's not wrestling anymore. Yes, that means a lot. Yes, he is one of the hottest stars in AEW, so this is going to be very, very interesting. This is a man who basically stays in character even on social media and is an excellent troll of the fans and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm going to click through the article. No further details have been disclosed on his role, so it's going to be interesting to see if he plays which wrestler from the pantheon of WWE, etc. He's going to be playing. But yes, well, that is a very interesting role. And you see that breaking news?
A rare thing.
This is the benefit of sort of recording around about 5 p.m. on a Monday. It's the A24 clearly up. There, you know, it's lunchtime in New York. News is starting to go out. Who knows? We might get more breaking news by the end of the episode, because I think it was on the last episode when we were talking with Billy about After Sun that the Gotham nominations dropped towards the end of it. So you never know what could happen between now and the end of the episode. But the episode is all about Pearl, and that is the prequel to X, which was written and directed by Ty West and was released by A24 just 6 months ago in March. Pearl was filmed secretly back-to-back with X and was first announced as a post-credit trailer with X in the United States, not in the UK, and received its premiere in the midnight slot at the Venice Film Festival. So, trapped on her family's isolated farm, Pearl must tend to her ailing father under the bitter and overbearing watch of her devout mother. Lusting for a glamorous life that she's seen in the movies, Pearl finds her ambition, temptation, and repression all colliding in this origin story of the woman that we met in X. So, Lee, I think if I can remember correctly, going back to our X episode, you were not the biggest fan of X, am I correct?
Yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy it. I rewatched it recently as well, and
you can rewatch it on Prime if you're in the UK, if you're waiting for that UK release date for Pearl, which has still not arrived.
I rewatched it and I was like, it's the same thing where I was watching it, where I was kind of like, oh, this is starting quite well. And then for a long period of time, it's just quite boring, you know, becomes this sort of slasher movie and so on. And it just becomes quite uninteresting. And I think I remembered seeing at the time, oddly, we didn't get the post-credit sequence, you know, the sort of trailer for X for Pearl with X when it came out here. So had to do the classic watch a YouTube cam footage. And I remembered seeing at the time was like, I think the best thing about X was the promise of Pearl, that it looked more like it was up my street. So yeah, I was actually really looking forward to Pearl despite not enjoying X whatsoever. It felt like it was going to be a more interesting film, and you know, obviously it's been quite a while wait to have even an opportunity to watch it through iTunes in America. You know, it's still not available here or any word on the horizon of when we're getting it. So yeah, I was aware that it was getting a good bit of buzz. It was certainly getting more praise than X was, and yeah, I was certainly optimistic that I would enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was, I think, slightly more positive on X. I think I gave it 3 out of 5 in the end. I mean, I appreciated the sort of grindhouse style of it. I like the fact that, you know, it started off as one film and then became something else. I would have preferred if the trailers had sort of kept the second half of the film a bit more of a secret in the marketing, and had just been about this group of people trying to make a porno in rural Texas, who, you know, down with that sort of thing, you know, Father Ted style. Because yeah, no, it changed into something. I mean, there was a lot said, and you know, I think there was still actually even people who saw X there was still a bit of confusion, I think, going around after the film about why Mia Goth was playing two roles. She was Maxine, and then she was also the old lady version of Pearl in all the sort of old lady makeup. And it was like, what's the reason for that? Are they related? Is it what's going on there? We never really found out. And then, you know, we got this sting that, you know, we're going to go back and find out the origin story of this woman who was wanting to be a star and, you know, has some interesting sexual appetites, I think it's fair to say, and is rather bloodlust when she doesn't get her own way, I think it was fair to say. So, I mean, this Pearl, like, I was there at Venice. I went to the midnight screening. It played very well. I mean, obviously, it will when, you know, you've got your director and star there watching it as well. And they received a standing ovation all the way through the end credits. Thankfully, Mia Goth did not have to... Well, she was actually smiling during the whole of the end credits, as she does in the whole of the end credits. But, I mean, this is a very different style and tone to X. X was a film which was, you know, playing on the archetypes and style of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff, the sort of grindhouse horror films which came out in the 70s. This is set much earlier. This is sort of set in the 20s, you know, just around about the end of the First World War. So, you know, we have got much, this is basically sort of like technical. It's got, I think I would almost say, you know, a Wizard of Oz sort of style to it, including a slightly different scene involving a scarecrow than the original Wizard of Oz, I think it's fair to say. I mean, what did you make of Ty West's stylistic choices for this one?
Yeah, I was kind of like, I guess I didn't know what to expect to an extent. Well, I was aware there had been praise for it. I was kind of maybe expecting, oh, it's going to be more of the same. It's going to be about this sort of, you know, young character and how she discovers the joy of shagging, basically. You know, it was, I kind of wasn't too sure what I was going to expect. And, you know, when I was kind of got into it, I was kind of like, oh, sort of this influenza pandemic, you know, this kind of, you know, use of bright colors, sort of the shows that were being put on, you know, almost the, even the sort of the tone and acting styles felt sort of very true to kind of those old showy style movies. And it felt like it really embraced that style of movie, which I completely didn't expect, but in a way I should have expected, because that's what it kind of promised in the trailer, a bit of an all singing, all dancing kind of sort of cabaret style film, I guess.
Yes, indeed. It does have a nice full blown sort of music and dance number. I mean, it's, you know, you've got this thread going through, you know, they are, I guess, technically horror films, but it is sort of looking at, you know, one woman's ambition and how that desire for fame and to find a better life outside of what she's got ultimately, you know, corrupts her when she doesn't get her own way. And, you know, it features, you know, an X Factor audition style thing that is up there with, you know, you feel totally awkward and don't know where to look when she gets rejected from this, and that's the moment where everything starts to crumble for her. And yeah, that is the moment. And then after that, it's like it's game over for her sanity, I think. And yeah, anyone who has crossed her or is preventing her from achieving her dream is basically in her sights. And I think one of the big talking points is it is obviously, you know, the performance of Mia Goth in this. You know, she, Ty West basically was sort of writing this prequel while filming X. I think he was so taken with her performance in this that he decided he wanted to do another one. And then, as we found out, that again, it wasn't on the, it wasn't a sting at the end of the Venice Film Festival. However, it was, I think it was the Toronto Film Festival it screened at as well, where they got the sting saying that we were going to be getting a third part of this now trilogy in Maxine XXX in the middle, where I assume it's set in the late 80s, early 90s, to the rise of VHS in the adult film industry in Hollywood at that point. So, I mean, Mia Goth, I think she, I mean, there's no denying her talent. She is, as you've said, a former guest on this podcast. You were very lucky enough to interview her. I mean, she is, for lack of a better word, I guess, one of our generation's scream queens. She has been slowly building up a huge body of work within the horror genre, like Suspiria, you know, The Secret of Marrowbone and stuff like that. I mean, what did you make of her performance in this, and you know, where how she played Pearl compared to the Pearl that we saw in X?
Yeah, it was just an all-round great performance. I don't subscribe to the theory that she should be nominated for an Oscar for this film whatsoever. I mean, that's a little bit on the silly side. But
I mean, if Toni Collette can't get for Hereditary, there's no way that Mia Goth is getting for this. I'm sorry. It's nice to dream, but yeah.
she has the full kind of thing here. You know, she does comedy really well. She does sort of innocent and naive really well. And I mean, everyone always has spoken about this sort of monologue towards the end of the film. And I thought that was incredibly well done. It was such a gripping thing to kind of watch. And, you know, even that end credits with the, you know, the awkward smiley face that I think we've all probably seen regardless of what we've seen about the film. You know, there was just everything that I would expect from sort of a broad performer, like a, you know, she just had a great range in this film that I really appreciated and valued. And, you know, there was a bit where I knew that there was a monologue that people were really raving about. And I must admit that the original part that I thought people were raving about was when she sort of goes to sort of this audition and, you know, it goes okay, but actually she misses out. And then, you know, she's really upset about it. She's pitching to the almost the judging panel. And I thought, oh, wow, that's really impressive. Maybe not, you know, as hyped up as I was led to believe, but I thought it was pretty impressive. And then it gets followed up by this wonderful sort of confession monologue. And I thought, oh, wow, this was really particularly impressive. It's not, you know, it maybe gets the Indie Spirit Awards, but it's never getting kind of the big ones. And yeah, I just thought she was excellent. And, you know, I've been a fan of her for a while. And I thought, like, I watched this film and I thought, this is her, you know, big moment. This is the one that is going to generate a lot of, you know, film and offers off the back of, and I'm really excited to see what she does next.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think even she probably expected when she signed up for X that it would lead to a trilogy of films, but she is great, and I think you mentioned
she's the co-writer as well of this one as
indeed,
I saw.
Yes, so she's getting to sculpt the character. I think probably a lot of that is potentially down to the monologue at the end. I expect she probably had quite a bit of influence in that, obviously, because it's such an important thing to do that I guess it probably helps if you have sort of written part of it so you're more familiar with it there. I mean, I think you mentioned the word broad earlier when talking about it, and I would actually say, yeah, I think the performance is very broad in this respect of it feels very much like a performance that you would have seen in a film in the sort of 20s and 30s. It is slightly over the top in places, but that's, you know, what they did, you know, back in the silent movies. They were playing to the camera, they didn't have dialogue and stuff like that, so everything was slightly over exaggerated, and I think she does that really well. And as for this monologue, yeah, it's about a 5 minute long. It's not single take. There is a couple of cutaways for the comical reactions of her best friend, who is trying to absorb exactly what she's telling her. But, you know, everyone was saying, like you say, you know, oh, she deserves an Oscar nomination for this monologue. And I was like, did you guys not see Rebecca Hall's 7 minute single take monologue from Resurrection, which was better? And I would say that Rebecca Hall is more deserving of an Oscar nomination for a few roles, such as Christine and then even another horror film, The Nighthouse. But yeah, that's me getting on my high horse about how Rebecca Hall is yet another horror performance which is being overlooked. Mia Goth and Pearl is a very good performance, but it was never gonna happen. And so, you know, she's regular in this, and I think you can see the evolution of, certainly of the, when we see the older character of this, the sort of the longing for that. She's still clearly hanging on to that dream of being a star, of being somebody famous. But I mean, there are certain hints. There's the bit with the scarecrow, where she sort of dry humps a scarecrow. But for me, it never really got. I mean, obviously, it explores her murderous tendencies, where she, you know, her temper boils over and she lashes out and stuff. But it, for me, it never really got into the whole sexual side, where, you know, in X, you know, there she's basically. Her husband has been, you know, grabbing people and then locking them in the basement where she's clearly been having her way with them. It doesn't really get into that, I guess, because, you know, the husband is off at war and only returns at the very end. I don't think this really counts as spoilers because, you know, obviously they feature an ex, so, you know, it's a difficult one to talk about. But, I mean, how did you feel that the film overall sort of tied into X in terms of, you know, you obviously had moments of foreshadowing, you know, had certain bits in the barn, you had the crocodile in the swamp nearby and stuff like that. How do you feel it sort of tied in together? Obviously, I think Pearl could be watched completely independently. You know, it would still be a good movie, but how did you think it felt sort of tying in to the movie that would come later / come before?
A little bit. The one thing that is more confusing for me is how Maxine sort of fits in. So, you know, is this a different character kind of now? Like, the timeline makes no sense because this is like, you know, 1918. So what is it? When does Pearl take place?
Pearl would be taking place.
No, sorry, X.
X would take place in the, I would say, early 70s. So, yeah, that would put her... So that could be sort of 40, 50 years later. So yeah, that would put, age-wise, yeah, she would be around about sort of in her 70s. So I guess, yeah, I mean, she doesn't look very good for her 70s. Maybe she's approaching 80s and stuff like that. But, you know, time-wise, that matches up. And then Maxine, the third film, which will be set, I believe, in like the 80s, 90s, will be following Mia Goth's character, younger character from X. If that's not too confusing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense, yeah. So that makes sense to me now. Like, I was kind of a bit curious about that. But yeah, I think it tied in quite well, but it was ultimately its own thing. Like, I think you could watch this film and never feel compelled to go, I'm going to watch X, for example. Like, I think this works really well on its own. And, you know, as I say, I expected it to be a much more... sexual kind of film, like that's where it was going, and you know the moments of sex are very amusing to an extent. You know, I think it does it much better than perhaps X did. You know, I really enjoyed the sort of the scene with the scarecrow, or when you meet the projectionist and he's sort of showing this kind of, you know, original sort of porn kind of movie.
Stag movies, I believe they were called back in the day.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, an illicit stag. Yeah. So, yeah, I really enjoyed those parts and building the character a bit. But ultimately, I just felt like it was for better, you know, ultimately, I think very much for better, that it was its own independent kind of film and so on and completely separate. Like, I can imagine rewatching this one again, whereas I just don't have that urge to watch X. I mean, I suspect, like, most of us will all do a triple bill before the next one comes out, X into Pearl into Maxine. Like, that's the way that these things kind of go. But with this one, I'm definitely keen to watch again or pick up when the price goes down. You know, it's obviously it's a bit of a premium rental at the moment, but I know I'm excited to see this one again. And, you know, there's lots of scenes that I really enjoyed, or character beats. You know, I enjoyed the scarecrow scene, I enjoyed the trip to the cinema, I enjoyed when sort of the murderous rampage kind of continued, you know, the audition scene, the monologue, you know, even the closing credits. There was lots that I enjoyed in a really tight 102 minute long film, whereas X, I was kind of like, I kind of thought the beginning was okay. Like, this was a good film with lots of markers of a quality film.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, it's funny to think that we started the year thinking that Jenna Ortega was going to be the Scream Queen of 2022, having been in Scream, and then it was announced that X was coming. But yeah, no, we've ended the year with it shifting towards Mia Goth instead. There is no confirmed release date for Maxine. Sadly, it doesn't look like Ty West will be able to get all three films done in a calendar year, which would be, you know, an incredible feat, especially, you know, given the pretty, you know, high bar that he's actually been setting himself with. You know, I guess for Lee, a slightly lower bar, which he's cleared quite easily with Pearl, and I guess it depends, you know, how he does that with Maxine. For me, overall, I mean, maybe it was a bit of festival fatigue and the fact that I had been on the Lido for about 19 hours by the time that I had seen Pearl. I was also coming off the back of being emotionally destroyed with the whale, but it didn't quite click for me. I think I was wanting something more, or what I got was different to maybe what I was expecting, so it didn't work 100% for me. But I still obviously appreciate Mia Goth's performance, and again, excited to see where she goes with her other character from this franchise in the next one as well. So that brings us to the end of Pearl. As I say, you can see X in the UK on Amazon Prime for free, or you can rent it from a variety of establishments. Pearl is now on PVOD. What are you getting charged at the moment for? Is it 19? Is it 25? $20?
You can buy it for $19. You can get it for $19 at the moment on iTunes.
Well, there you go. If you're in the UK and have a US iTunes account, I guess there's going to be a tipping point where you're like, $20 versus an undetermined wait. I think it will probably depend if Pearl still does not have a UK release date by the time that they announce a release date for Maxine in the US. I think that's going to push a lot of people towards US iTunes, but I guess we'll have to see. As we alluded to earlier, we've still got lots of great A24 films coming up for us to review. Causeway has just dropped on Apple Plus, so we'll be reviewing that in a couple of weeks. But next up, we're catching up with Marcel the Shell. So a nice change of pace from Pearl. We're going with a family-friendly animation film about a shell with his shoes on. What more could you want?
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.